start off by saying what this church has meant to me for 35 years. My daddy and I came here on a motorcycle 35 years ago. And I didn't know Brother Haley, but we went outside and were getting on the motorcycle to leave after one of the sessions. And he said, "Where are you old boys from?" We said, "We're from Madison, Indiana." And my dad said, "Louisville, Kentucky." He said, "Did you guys ride that motorcycle all the way down here?" And we said, "Yes, sir." He said, "Anybody that crazy is bound to make a good preacher." And then the years to come, I came back time and time again for about 10 years. And most of you may not know, I came on an old broke-down van and with not much money. And we struggled to get down here. And when we got here and people found out that we'd had trouble, I'd spent about $260 repairing the van on the way down, coming down. And when I got ready to leave, there was an envelope with $300. And I went back home with that. My daddy was changed by being here. My children have been changed by being here. And several of the brethren from Madison who came many years after that have been changed as a result of what you all do. I might also tell you, when my daddy and I came, we stayed in a hotel in town that might not have been the best place. And when Giles Baker found out, he came over and got us and told us to come stay with him. And we were amazed at that because, first of all, we were riding a motorcycle. You know, you have to wonder about people like that. And then for him to take us in, not knowing whether we had cooties or what we were. And Giles has been to my daddy and I until my daddy passed, of course. One of our dear friends. We've talked to him many times. And he's had a lot of influence on us. And Dee and Norma, who, of course, that first time we came, my daddy said, "Who do these people think we are?" We went over to Dee and Norma's for lunch. And we were wondering why these people were having us around. We were eating with the preachers quite a bit. And we were confused about who they thought we were. But it just goes to show you what you have been doing, maybe unaware of, through the years. Thank you so much for what you do, who you are. And for the elders who who have continued to do this great work and encouraging people, thank you so much for all of that. I want to say some about the men that I've been working with this week. If you only knew how small I feel when I'm around, I feel like a little flea on you guys. And I know this is not the application of Jeremiah's passage when the Lord told him in Jeremiah 12, I believe it verse 5, that if you're weary with running with the foot soldiers, how are you going to be able to run with the horses? I've been running with the horses this week. A different application from what Jeremiah had, but I have been running with men who really know how to run and have given their lives and their minds and their lives and their wives, and everything about those men have been a blessing to me this week. And so I am indebted to you fellas for letting me stand in your ranks. Thank you so much for all that you've done. And Tim and Vicky, I tell you, they're dear friends of ours, and we love them, and it's always good to be with them. I have loved Tim's daddy for many years, and now Tim has filled his shoes in every kind of a way, and thank you so much for what you do and who you are. I want to tell you why I'm not ashamed of the gospel, an illustration that came to me several years ago. My sons and I would go over to the dump about once a month and take a bunch of things off that need to be thrown away. We had an open dump. You go in there and dump things out. And if you want to pick things up, you could do that too. And so we went over there one time. My wife finally forbid us from going because we'd bring home a bigger load than we took. But we went over there one time, and a fellow was backing up there who had a nursery with all these trees and dirt and stuff in the dump truck, and he dumped this truck of stuff right in the middle of the dump. And so I didn't think anything about that. Came back the next spring after the season had come into a good full time and pulled into the dump, and there was this mound of dirt with beautiful flowers and trees and all this beautiful stuff right in the middle of the dump. And it just reminded me of what God has done in somebody like me. You can live in the sewer and be like a trash pile. And if somebody will plant the seed in your heart, somebody who loves you and loves God will plant the seed in your heart, it will blossom and grow wherever you plant it. And so we are so rich and so blessed by what we believe, the power of what we believe, and what it can do to the lives of people. And so thank you for what you do and helping the gospel be sown into the world and even in this place. I want to kind of go back and look through the Old Testament a little bit and show you some examples of where we see, as we think about God and young people, and to tell you that my sons came down here several years, and they sat and took notes and got to meet people and had an influence on them. And when they were growing up as young boys, they wanted to play sports, so I coached and tried to help. And first time my oldest son, John, I think he's in the fourth grade, played basketball, maybe the fifth. But anyway, and they were wearing these real short shorts. And John said, "Dad, you know, when you fall down, your legs go up in the air, you kind of expose yourself with these shorts on." I said, "Well, maybe Mom can make you a pair of shorts and make them a little longer so that won't happen to you." And so she went ahead and got some material, made some shorts, and she even sewed the school emblem on the side of the leg there. And he went to practice, and all the boys said, "Man, Coach, can we get some of those?" So Diane made the whole team. This was before there were jams, back when everybody wore real short shorts playing sports. And so John had changed the team's uniform when he started playing basketball. Scott got to playing football. I was helping to coach, and they always had playoff games on Wednesdays. And I told him, "If you have it on Wednesday," I said, "I'll have to leave a little after halftime." Well, they wanted to see if I meant what I said, so they put it on Wednesday. And Scott was the quarterback. And so I told Scott, I said, "Now, Scott, after halftime, about 5 minutes after halftime, I'm going to walk around this field, go over and get in the car, and I'm going to church." And I said, "You got to make your mind up. Now, I want you parents to know I was not going to let him stay. But I want him to think he was making his own mind up about it." And so after the halftime, he went out on the field. He was counting cadence, getting ready to hike the ball. He looked up and saw me go around by the goalpost. He just stopped and started running across the field toward me. The referee threw a flag. And somebody said, "What's going on?" And heard somebody in the crowd shout, "They're going to church." But it's amazing how your children and what you pass on to your children. And I have been blessed by my family. And when I look at the Bible and see people, like in Genesis 18 and verse 19, when God said about Abraham, I know he'll command his children to do what is right. You know what you're seeing already with Abraham and what God's concern is? God is concerned about young people. Now, Giles said to me today, he said, "Well, if it's going to be for young people, what am I going to get?" I said, "Well, listen, a person that's going to live forever, can you ever become old? We're going to live forever. You ever thought about that? This is for all of us." And so when we look at these examples in the Bible and see what God said about Abraham, and then you go over a little further in Genesis 22, and you see what happened on the occasion when God tested Abraham, and you know that lad there was Isaac. And Isaac, when his father took the fire and the knife and built the altar, and Isaac said to his father, "Where is the sacrifice?" And he said, "Son, God will provide." And then he bound that boy and put him on the altar and raised up his hand. Can you imagine what was in the lad's mind? What he was saying, how old he was, we don't know. But you know, that boy had been to worship before, and he seemed to have great confidence in his father. And, of course, the book of Hebrews, and we're going to go in a moment, just kind of glimpse through these snapshots. The Hebrew writer just keeps snapping pictures of people all the way down through time who just kept doing the same thing. And what it shows us, young people, that one fundamental thing we have got to get a grip on: we have got to have faith in God. When we put our faith in God, and I tell people that faith comes by hearing, that means the eye of faith is on the side of your head, not in the front of it. You can't see it. You've got to turn your ear and listen to what God says. And when you do that, faith comes. And when that faith comes, and you see those churches in the New Testament, how every time the apostle commended them because of their faith that they had, their faith in the Lord Jesus, these people were converted to the Lord. And so you go out through the Old Testament, you see the same thing has always been true. People in the Old Testament kept doing what God said. And then you go along and you see somebody, for example, in Genesis 37, like Joseph, 17 years old. And he seeing a vision and explained this vision to his brothers and how they felt about that and what they thought about him. And then you see what God did with this young man, Joseph. And then you come over to Exodus and you see this young man being born during a time when all the Israelite boys were being thrown in the river, drowned in some way. And here's a mother who takes this boy of hers down to the river. And I wonder what care she put in that basket before she ever let that thing go in the water and set him down in that water. And here's a man who is drawn out of the water. And you see Moses, and you see in that picture Amram and Jochebed, the mother and father of Moses, and his sister standing on the sideline watching her mother. You know, when children, parents do things, children are watching. But you see God using these young people and doing things. You just go down through the pages of the Old Testament, you come along and you see people, for example, like Josiah. And you see what God did with this young man and how that God used him at age 8. He was doing what was right in the sight of the Lord. At 18, or 16 or 18, he restored the temple. He brought these people back and even destroyed the idolatry that had been among Israel for many years. This young man named Josiah. How did we find out about him early on in 1 Kings, the 13th chapter? A young prophet went down into Samaria and prophesied that there would be a man named Josiah who would take the bones of these priests and burn them on the altar one day. And so you just see God going down through history, using young people over and over. We see the Daniels. We see people like these Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego type young men taken away from home, put into a new territory. And we see their faith coming through. And the book of Hebrews, again, keeps snapping pictures of them to remind us in the gospel that this is what it takes. And then you look at the statement in Jeremiah 1 and verse 8, where God told Jeremiah, "Don't you say I'm a child." It must have meant that he was a young man. He said, "Don't be afraid of their faces. And I want you to go out and root up and tear down." Here's a young man. And you can just see that as you go, I skip Samuel. What about Samuel? If you had a child that you had prayed for and God answered your prayer, would you take your child down to the temple? You may have heard what was going on down there with Eli and his sons and what was happening down there. And for you to take your son down there and put him in the midst of that and dedicate him to serving the Lord there. And then for God to start speaking to Samuel, and he didn't really know what that was about. And finally, when he does realize God's talking to him, he says, "Samuel, I'm going to tell you things that will make the ears of Israel tingle." God's going to tell a young man that, you see. And then you go to the 119th Psalm, and you read in the Psalms, the 144th Psalm, is in verse 12, about a young girl, what she grows up to be like a pillar in the temple, and a young man growing up like a tree. And then in the 119th Psalm, verse 9, how can a young man cleanse his way by taking heed unto the word of the Lord? And that 119th Psalm is a picture of a man who is cleaving to the dust. He's discouraged. He's broken. He's been beaten down by people who are gossiping about him and trying to slander him and destroy him, and people in high places are working against him. And yet he gives us the key for young men. How do you do it, young men? You listen to what God says. And so you just keep going through the Old Testament, and you just get this clear picture that God has always been concerned about young people. God has always used young people. And we've already mentioned Joel chapter 2, when God foretold the Spirit would be poured out, when Peter in Acts 2:17 said, "This is that." And it's a picture where God is going to use these young men and old men. And I mentioned, I'm glad for the old men today. I used to be glad for the young men. Now I'm kind of glad God's still using an old guy, you see. But God would pour his Spirit out and use young people and old people. And he would not only do that, but these handmaidens and servants and people of all walks of life would be involved in that. No matter what your status, no matter what your age, no matter what your gender is, God will use you. God cares about you. He wants everybody he can get. And this message would be poured out. The gospel would be preached when the Spirit would come out. and revelation will be given and judgment will come and salvation will be the result of it, Peter said. And that's what he preached on the day of Pentecost. And so you just go, and I just have just kind of blew the dust off the top of it, haven't I? You people say, why'd you miss all those other ones? Well, there's a lot more there. And then you come to the New Testament and you think about when Mary got the information that she got. Can you imagine what you would have thought? You know what was done to people who committed fornication and adultery under the Old Testament? And for Mary to be told, you're going to have a child? And she wasn't married yet? And that God would use this virgin? And what God would say about this young girl? Can you see that God... And you know, when you go over, I should have said, when you go into the 11th chapter of the book of Hebrews, and you start reading this listing of people, have you noticed when the writer really makes the application of the book of Hebrews in the 10th chapter, verse 18, about how that we need to, it's time for us to draw near to God and make the application of it, to come near to Him now with a true heart and full assurance of faith, having our conscience sprinkled from an evil conscience and our bodies washed in pure water. And so here we're coming near to God. And what do? We understand that faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen as yet, the Hebrew writer tells us. Here's what faith is. It stands under and it undergirds. Young people, if you can get your faith to stand under your life and undergird everything, listen to what God said and do what God says, let me tell you, you know what you will find out, just like those people find out? And you see, you know, we could look at Deuteronomy, the 6th chapter, where God urged parents to teach their children. We can see the outcome of what happened when they did not do that. And our generation grew up and didn't know the Lord. And so we all understand that God is so concerned. And when we come to the New Testament in Ephesians 6, where children are told to obey their parents in all things, for this is right. Honor your father and your mother. This is the first commandment with promise. That it may be well with you, and you may live long on the earth. Now think about that. So over and over, and we see Timothy's in the New Testament. In 2 Timothy 1, I believe it's verse 5. His mother and his grandmother. I have been so blessed in my life. My mama ran off and left when I was young. And I went to the dogs when it happened. My grandmother, who had such influence on me, moved away because she was my mom's mother. She lived with us, and so she moved away. And so I just took a plane crash. I didn't care about living anymore. I didn't care what I did. And so I just made a mess out of my life. And as I went along in my life, my grandpa, who obeyed the gospel when he was 69 years old, when he was dying, I went into the hospital and talked to him just before he got to where he couldn't talk anymore. He said, now, Gary, he said, now, I want you to grow up and be an elder of the church. The church is starving for leadership. You get married and you raise your kids right, and you grow up and you be an elder of the church. He said, now, you're not very smart. You're not going to get very far. But he said, you can be an elder of the church. If you give your heart to God, even though you're not real smart, you can be an elder of the church. And so I set out when I obeyed the gospel, you see. I tell people, I never really have decided yet to be a preacher. I'm just preaching more all the time. I had planned to be an elder, you see. But I went to my grandpa. He said, Gary, he said, now you make sure you tell those people how Moses built the ark. He said, you take him to Genesis 6. He said, and you tell them how Noah built the tabernacle in Exodus 40 and did everything the way. And I thought, you know something? When you get old, names are hard to keep straight. But I knew what Grandpa meant. And then my Uncle Charlie, who was an elder of the church, had got bitten by a tick and got Spotty Mountain Rocky fever. And he had a stroke. And so I went to see him 2 days before he died. And he was crying. He said, Gary, don't pay attention to these tears. He said, they tell me when you get this spotty mountain, rocky mountain spotted fever, whatever it is. And he said, and I've had a stroke. He said, I'm crying. But he said, I'm not crying. He said, that's just my body responding to what's happened. He said, I am thrilled to death. I'm excited. And he said, I want you to know you give your life to the Lord and you grow up and you be an elder of the church and you give your life to the cause of Christ. And he said, when you get where I am, if an old tick gets you, you will be so glad. He said, I'm excited about what I've done. I've made the decisions that I believe God wanted me to make. I've given my life and my family and all that I possess to try to glorify God. He said, you just do what I've done. And he said, you'll be glad when you get where I am right now. And so I've had people, you see, I told you, I think about my great-grandmother. When we were a boy, we'd go to the country and stay all summer and then go back to the city. And my great-grandmother, at the end of every summer, she'd say, all right, they called me Hossfly because I was always buzzing around. They said, okay, Hoss. She said, okay, Hossfly, go get my specs. And that meant to go get her glasses. So I went and got my great-grandmother's glasses, and she leaned over in the bed. She was 98 years old the last time I remember. And she put the specs on like that. I thought, now what'd she need those for? She's looking over the top of them. And she took my hand. She looked at me. She said, you swear to me you're going to grow up and be a gospel preacher. And the first time I said, Dad, what's going on? He said, oh, go on, swear so we can go back to town. So I swore to my great-grandmother every summer as a boy, I'd grow up and be a gospel preacher. Never dreaming how that would weigh on my conscience. Listen, great-grandma, grandma and grandpa, listen to me. You can strengthen the faith of these young people. You can give them something, and it will carry them a long way when you're long gone. My grandpa came to a meeting just before he got to where he couldn't drive anymore. He was in the country, and they had me come hold a meeting there, and he came to the meeting, and people told me, they said, now when you go outside the building, Thelbert, that's my grandpa, said, Thelbert, he can't hear, and he's going to start his car and floor it to the, put it, accelerate to the floor, and he doesn't know the motor's revved up. He's going to jerk it down and drive and stone all the people in the parking lot, so stay in the building until he gets away. But he came in, and he stepped up on the step, and I was standing there, and he had his glasses on. It looked like he'd been eating chicken and rubbed the grease on his glasses. And I said, how you doing? He said, I'm doing fine. He said, is my grandson here? And I said, is he a handsome-looking fellow? He said, he sure is. I said, you're talking to him. And he said to me, he said, you know, he said, I don't know why I come. He came out after it was over, and he said, I noticed when they were singing, he never sang the same song everybody else was singing. And when I was preaching, I could tell he wouldn't hear me. He'd sit like that. And then he'd reach in his pocket and get his big old pocket watch out. Matter of fact, I've got that pocket watch. I gave it to my son. He'd peck it on the bench and look at me like that, you know. But he said, I don't know what they're singing. He said, I don't know these people. And I don't know what's going on in the sermon. He said, I don't know what. He said, I don't know why I've come. I said, Grandpa, I know why you come. You're going to help me go down the road many miles when you're gone. I've seen your faith and what it did to you. Young people, pay attention. Have you thought about the Proverbs are telling you to listen? Pay attention to people who have gone before you. Accept criticism. Look at the statements in the conclusion of the book of Ecclesiastes in the 11th chapter, in verse 9. The appeal to young people to rejoice and have a good life, but remember that you're going to stand before God one day. And the 12th chapter says, remember now thy creator in the days of youth, before the evil days come, when you have no pleasure in them anymore, you see. So remember now while you're young. Have you noticed the statistics that show that most young people, most people who obey the gospel or do what God says, depending on who's counting and who they're counting, demonstrate that most young people, generally young people, will obey the gospel. As they get older, it's harder to get somebody to obey the gospel. And generally, somebody who's under 13 years of age who makes some kind of decision about that, very seldom do they ever make any great major changes, quite often. And you can see religions that take young boys in and train them to be priests because they know that. And so that says we as a people need to think about these little people. You know what the culture of America has done? They have tried to have these youth ministries, and if you've done any reading about that, they're coming back now and saying, we have utterly failed. They've tried to get young people, get them off, have special services in the back. Young people don't come in here and sit with the adults. They go out there and have their own church out there. So the young people feel like they're not a part. And then they have these events to bring young people together to entertain them and do things. And here a young person comes with some sin they're struggling with and they want to talk to somebody about it. And this older person, well, listen, you're going to go to heaven one day, so don't worry about that. See how many marshmallows you can stick in your mouth. And young people have turned away because they're looking for answers. They're looking for meaning. And if somebody would just take the prologue to John and show that in the beginning there was somebody there who was the Logos. That word was used in the Septuagint translation. The Greek people saw that word for the word logic, the logical meaning for everything. The Hebrew people looked at the Old Testament when the Septuagint translation was translated. The word that was used there many times where it says God said. And so the Hebrew people, when they saw logos, they knew that meant that God was the active cause. Because when God said, let there be light, the universe lit up. And that's what they thought about, logos. But when John opens his mouth and begins to write and tell us about the logos, John said, you want to know what the meaning of it all is? What happened in the very beginning? He who was with God was God. He became flesh and dwelt among us. And so John said, when God opened his mouth to tell you about who he was, Jesus stepped out on the pages of history and said, here is what it is all about. Somebody who is the active cause, the powerful force, and he is the one who was with God in the beginning and who was God. And so we see this wave upon wave being described in the first chapter of what we have received when Jesus came. Just like the ocean rolling, we receive grace upon grace. It just keeps flooding down on us. Because he is the answer. He stood at the beginning and he gives meaning, young people, to everything. And so when you see the principles in the ecclesiastical writer, you remember what his conclusion is? Hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments. For this is the whole of man. My old translation says duty. If I could read, I'd change translations, but I can't read. I've tried to memorize this one some. But the whole of man. You see, your faith has got to have something connected to it. There has got to be some duty that goes with it. And then you've got to understand that to see things right, you've got to listen to God, and it starts in Proverbs 1, verse 7, by having a fear for God. That's where knowledge begins. That's where understanding of life, where life begins. And then verses 7, 8 and 9 tell us that you've got to listen to the commands of your mother and your father. So you let the Lord be the foundation of life and listen to what your mother and father tell you. And then be careful, verse 10 goes on to show us, about who you choose to run with. Your friends, young people, can mess you up. Choose your friends wisely. When sinners consent thee and want you to run with him, consent thou not, the Bible says. And the reason why is because wisdom is crying out to you. And she's out in the concourses, out in the busy places of life telling you, look at what's going on. Watch the news and see what young people are doing who don't pay any attention to God. Look at their lives. Look at the world. And be wise and reverence God and listen to God, because God is trying to help you to see that's where happiness comes from. Have you noticed that in the in the Proverbs? The second chapter paints this picture about how you need to find wisdom. And the person who finds it and retains it, he's the person who'll be happy. You'll find what will give you great joy and happiness if you understand those principles in the book of Proverbs. And so when we put all that together and we just start looking at this snapshot book in the book of Hebrews of people. And what you see in these churches in the first century is these people, they put their faith in God, and they had their faith was a working faith. It did something. And not only that, but they had a hope. They thought about what was ahead of them. I mentioned the other night about my dad and I fishing years ago, and we'd fished and got weary of not catching anything, and he blew the lantern out and started the motor and pushed the lever down just to be acting silly. And we'd been fishing by this big rock wall, about as far as that wall is from me here. Well, he pushed the lever down, and we started going, and all of a sudden he flips the light on, and we're about halfway between here and that wall. All of a sudden, we fly over the windshield, tear the front of the windshield off of the boat, and land in the water, and my dad was hot-headed. I thought, he's going to kill me now if something's happened, you know. And I could hear my dad. He reached up and turned the motor off, and he was snickering. I said, Dad, what's wrong? He said, Son, I said, Dad, we about killed ourselves. What are you laughing about? He said, Son, I'm so glad you forgot to pull the anchor up. Young people, hope is the anchor of the soul. It'll hold you. It'll carry you through the storm. Now, you'll move around. You'll blow this way and blow that way, but you won't get far from where you're anchored. And if you can see that anchor's resting in what God has sworn and promised, and it's immutable, you don't have to worry about what God has said. I tell young people, the earth has aged 2.5 billion years since I was in high school. But the Word of God is the same. You won't miss it if you'll anchor yourself in what's coming ahead of you. And you'll be future motivated. Don't worry about how it is today. Don't worry about the trouble you're having today. Realize it's going to be okay. God's going to make everything okay. And He's just not going to do it today. But it's going to be okay. And not only do we need to have that kind of a motivation, but thirdly, we've got to have a love, young people. We've got to have a love for all the saints. And I've said that everywhere about what I call church chiggers or human chiggers. Y'all may not have chiggers down here. Do y'all have chiggers down here? Well, they're chiggers in the church. Have you noticed that? They get under your skin and drive you crazy. When they start toward you, you just, oh, here they come. You know? We've got to be family-oriented. We've got to be. We've got to love each other. And if we make up our mind to do those sorts of things, young people, I tell you, we'll have the power to make it all the way. Thank you so much.